You are listening to The Butterfly Effect on Penguin Radio, 102.3 FM, only at Dominican University of California. I am your host, DJ Monarch. This is The Butterfly Effect, from a spark to flame. Welcome to this episode of The Butterfly Effect. The Butterfly Effect is an idea that is commonly used in chaos theory. We are going to be discussing how a small change can make much bigger changes happen, and how one small incident can have a big impact on the future. A show about how a small change can have a much larger impact on our future. On today's episode of The Butterfly Effect, we are going to be discussing the American caste system and the structural racism in our society. The American caste system was an idea brought to light by Pulitzer Prize winning author Isabel Wilkerson. Isabel Wilkerson, author of Caste, The Origins of Our Disconnect. If you are unsure of the meaning of the caste system, it's okay. I'll break it down for you. I was confused at first as well. Caste is an artificial construction of hierarchy, ranking of people within a society. Not to get confused with class, which is different from caste because it is possible to act a different class, but caste is a structure. Author Isabel Wilkerson says, quote, "Caste focuses in on the infrastructure of our divisions and the rankings, whereas race is the metric that's used to be determined one's place in that caste. Caste predates the idea of race, which is only 400 or 500 years old, dating back to the transatlantic slave trade. The term is more precise than race. It is more comprehensive, and it gets at the underlying infrastructure that often we cannot see. But that is there, undermining much of the inequality and injustices and disparities that we live in within this country." Author Isabel Wilkerson believes that caste reinforces power dynamics more than race. She also touches on the idea how the word caste is less emotionally charged than the word race. And I see where she's coming from, especially in today's society, 2021, where people are woke, the word race or racism can cause mixed reactions. People can either get really fired up or completely shut down, and sometimes the point we're trying to make never gets across because the word race stops people in their tracks. But is that necessarily a bad thing? Isn't it good that the word race requires a reaction, that it is emotionally charged? Maybe the word race is emotionally charged because of the history of this country and the systems put in place to oppress certain people. Or do the word race and the word caste play a role? Is caste the framework? Is caste the bone structure while race is the skin? It is important to understand both to get a clear understanding of injustices and inequalities in the United States of America. After the break, we are going to be discussing a personal experience and an eye-opening opportunity which allowed me to understand my level of privilege and more of the inequality in our country. You are listening to The Butterfly Effect on Penguin Radio, 102.3 FM, only at Dominican University of California. I am your host, DJ Monarch, from a spark to a flame. We'll be right back. Welcome back to this episode of The Butterfly Effect on Penguin Radio, 102.3 FM only at Dominican University of California. Once again, I am your host, DJ Monarch. On today's episode, we have been discussing the American caste system and the importance of understanding caste and race and the roles they both play in our society here in the United States of America. Now I'm going to be talking about some of my personal experiences, and some opportunities that gave me a clear understanding of the inequality here in the United States. So a little bit about me. I took Spanish in my first year of high school. It was an absolute disaster. I studied French in elementary and middle school, and even though it was never easy for me, I had a good grasp of the vocabulary and the grammar. I even had a pretty decent accent. But I started my freshman year at a small private school that did not offer French. So I took Spanish. How hard could it be? They're similar, right? No. And I really tried Spanish. I even went to the winter break trip to Peru. But by the end of that year, I was clear that Spanish was not going well for me and that I needed to do something else. If I wanted a future that included me going to college, I needed to find an online French class. Okay, you might be wondering, why am I telling you this? Who cares if you're bad at Spanish? But I promise I'm getting to it. My first semester of my freshman year, I took a service learning class here at Dominican University of California. In this class, I had the wonderful opportunity to partner with Canal Alliance ESL. For those who do not know, ESL stands for English as a Second Language. I was excited to be able to work with a community partner, but when I filled out the application, they asked, "Do you speak Spanish?" Dun 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 dun. Oh no, I thought I escaped this Spanish failure in high school, but here I was once again. Because of my past experience with Spanish, I was more than a little nervous about taking on a service learning position with Canal Alliance ESL. I did not want to fail the students or the organization I would be working with, and I didn't want to disappoint my professors and my classmates here at Dominican University. Even though I was wary in the beginning, I can now say that I learned a lot about myself and gained a much larger definition of my community. I have had the opportunity to work with Canal Alliance ESL since my freshman year. Though this experience, I had a better understanding of economic and racial inequalities in Marin County in California and in the United States of America as a whole. I have developed a better understanding of how privilege operates and even of my own privilege. And I have gained important skills of listening, working with others to help them tell their own stories. Canal Alliance is a nonprofit community-based organization in Marin County, California, that works with low-income Latino immigrants. Canal Alliance believes change through a combination of advocacy and direct service, so they can work includes meeting basic needs like the food pantry and working to create policy through social and economic justice work. One of their most important programs is offering classes in English as a second language. During my freshman year, I served as a teacher's aide in the Wednesday 200 intensive class. The lead teacher in my class was a very serious, determined woman who was truly invested in her student success. The class met from 8 p.m. to 10 p.m. Those late hours of the class is an example of how the class is directed towards older students who work and have families. Because of the ongoing pandemic, this class met entirely via Zoom, which made it somewhat difficult to build authentic connections with the students, but I still loved every minute of it. The first hour of class usually consisted of a lesson on a new unit, while the second hour consisted of working in breakout rooms, focusing on specific questions or going over homework. In this class, there were about 18 students. All of them, men and women, in the class were adults ranging from ages about 19 to 40. My role as a teacher's aide was to lead breakout rooms. I was responsible for answering questions, practicing pronunciation, leading vocabulary games, and going over homework assignments. We spent an average of about 30 minutes each class in breakout rooms. In the breakout rooms, I helped students make sure they had the right pronunciation of words. We used the Venture Student Book and the Venture Student Workbook to do so. The class was structured in a very particular way. Each week, we focused on a new unit. The units ranged from vocabulary about furniture to filling out accident reports. The information we learned in class was structured so that the students would learn particular valuable English skills that they need the most to help them in everyday life. For example, I remember that the students were very motivated in the unit where we did a lesson about completing an accident report. Accidents are common in many of the jobs that the students have, like construction and landscaping. It was easy to see how motivated and excited they were to learn about the accident report vocabulary because it made them feel more empowered in their day-to-day work life. Research shows that ESL training is very important, but also very difficult for Spanish-speaking immigrants. Spanish-speaking adults need to have a basic ability to speak, read, and understand English in order to be able to live well in the United States of America. Immigrants who do not speak or understand English are more likely to be taken advantage of at work. They have a harder time communicating with the teacher and administrators where their kids go to school, and they might find it nearly impossible to rent an apartment or get a driver's license. This has been true for, unfortunately, many decades. A 1989 article by Elizabeth Hayes talks about how many barriers ESL education, and more than 30 years later, another article by Thomas Galt found many of the same barriers were still a problem. Working with these adult ESL students was an important lesson about my personal language privilege. For these students, English class is not about getting a good grade. It is about having a good life. When I tried to learn Spanish, I was worried that a bad grade might affect my college applications. But even if I never learned a word of Spanish, I know I can read directions to buy things I need on Amazon. If I get lost, I won't have trouble asking someone for directions. If I need to fill out a job application, I know I'll be able to read it. If I get sick, I can tell the doctor what is wrong. If I'm in an emergency, I know the ambulance dispatcher will understand me. If I need to talk to my teachers or someday talk to my boss, I know I will be understood. These are some of the privileges I have as a native English speaker in the United States of America. Canal Alliance ESL's mission is to combat structural racism by preparing and empowering immigrants through English language learning. Quote, "We believe everyone has the right to achieve their dreams. Every day we educate, empower, support, and partner with motivated immigrants and their families to best meet all their unique needs. From putting food on the table, to becoming U.S. citizens, to learning English, to graduating from college. Because when we support immigrants, Marin becomes a place where everyone can live, work, and succeed. Canal Alliance, who we are." Writer Carla Cornejo-Valencio is a recipient of DACA, which is Deferred Action for Childhood Arrivals, and is one of the first undocumented students to graduate from Harvard. Her book, The Undocumented Americans, was a finalist for the prestigious National Book Award in 2020. During her conversation with NPR's podcast, Code Switch, Valencio said, "The American dream is a pyramid scheme." I am like one of the top sellers at Mary Kay, and I am recruiting so many people. And I need to warn them that they need to take care of their mental health, because that is going to be the casualty, the price they pay for the American dream. Because of my service work with Canal Alliance, I became more interested in how this pyramid scheme works for Latino Americans. As an African American woman, I grew up hearing that employment discrimination was very obvious, because Black people have twice the unemployment rates of white people. This year, I learned that Latino immigrants face a similar problem. Latinos, especially foreign-born Latinos, have higher unemployment than white people. Not only is unemployment higher, but Latinos are more likely to have lower-paying jobs and jobs in the service sector. A recent government report says foreign-born workers were less likely than native-born workers to be employed in management, professional, and related occupations, 33.9% compared with 42.2%. And in sales and office occupations, 15.5% compared with 22.4%. In her book, Valencio writes about the difficult, low-paying, and even belittling jobs so many undocumented Americans end up doing because they don't have legal status and because they may not have good enough English skills. The American dream tells us that anyone who works hard can climb a ladder to success. But many Latino workers work very hard but never get to climb that ladder. They are even the group most likely to experience wage theft. Working with Canal Alliance ESL really developed my awareness of the widespread inequality in the United States. I have lived and visited many cities, but before I came to Dominican University of California, I was unaware of the large economic inequality in California, especially in Marin County. Being from the South, I always saw California as this utopic place where everyone had equal resources. Boy, was I wrong. Marin County of California's population is just over 250,000 residents. Most of the population, 85.3%, identifies as white. Only 2.8% identify as Black or African American, and 16.3% identify as Hispanic or Latino. More than 1 in 5 residents, which is about 22.7%, speak a language other than English in their household. In 2003, the Public Policy Institute of California released a report titled Racial and Ethnic Wage Gaps in the California Labor Market. This study found Latino wage disparities can be largely explained by education and occupational differences. If U.S.-born Latinos had the same educational attainment as whites, the wage gap between them would decline significantly to 93 cents per dollar for both men and women. If Latino worked in the same occupations as whites, the difference would be eliminated altogether. Dominican University of California is surrounded by a very wealthy neighborhood filled with extravagant houses. Meanwhile, the Canal District is very different. The Canal District is densely populated by Latin Americans. A quarter of the households in the Canal District fall below the poverty line. 71% of those living in the neighborhood's education level does not exceed a high school diploma. Even though our society says anyone can work hard and make it to the top, the truth is that white Americans are born with a level of privilege that even the hardest working person of color will never be able to achieve. Privilege is an advantage granted only to a particular group, and while others find it impossible to move up the ladder to prosperity. After the break, we are going to be discussing more about the structural racism which makes the American dream an unachievable standard. You are listening to The Butterfly Effect on Penguin Radio, 102.3 FM, only at Dominican University of California. I'm your host, DJ Monarch, from a spark to a flame. We'll be right back. Welcome back to this episode of The Butterfly Effect on Penguin Radio, 102.3 FM, only at Dominican University of California. Once again, I am your host, DJ Monarch, and on today's episode, we have been discussing the structural racism which makes the American dream an unachievable standard. I came to college ready to tell my own story. Working with Canal Alliance has challenged me to think about how to help others tell their story too. Because I struggled with Spanish in high school, I was nervous about being a teacher's aide because I thought I did not know enough Spanish to be helpful to the students I was working with in this program. However, after a few weeks of being a teacher's aide, I was able to connect with the students. It was surprising to me how positive the students' attitudes were, even though class was late at night and usually after a full day of work. During the first couple of classes and weeks of the semester, I admired the students' dedication. The students consistently showed up to class with a positive attitude and were enthusiastic to learn new topics. It is very apparent that students were extremely dedicated to furthering their English education. There were even a few outstanding students who consistently logged onto Zoom early to ask any questions or just to practice having a conversation in English. I love this. I love to watch the students grow and become more comfortable with the English language. Unfortunately, as the semester continued, fewer and fewer students attended class. It was obvious that many of the students lived in challenging circumstances, and the pandemic exacerbates these circumstances. At the beginning of the school year, the Los Angeles Times reported about how online learning fails low-income students. A survey of districts showed a big disparity between poor and wealthy schools. Quote, the Times survey showed that low-income serving districts like Linwood Unified were at a deep digital deficit compared to districts serving more affluent areas. On average, about half the students in low-income serving districts had computers available for schoolwork when campus closed. Among the largest districts, an average of nearly two-thirds of students had them. But among the most affluent serving districts, an average of 87% of the students had computers when campus closed. And virtually every student, 98%, had them about 3 weeks later. The Los Angeles Times survey focused on K through 12 schools, but I could see similar issues affecting the adult students I was working with at Canal Alliance ESL. They had to deal with not having a quiet workspace or unreliable Wi-Fi connections. Each person had to balance working full-time, taking care of their family, doing homework to prepare for class, and being present for 2 hours every night, every week. This kind of workload can definitely take its toll. The inequality in the United States of America has been more clearly manifested during the COVID-19 pandemic. There is an assumption that all families have access to the proper materials for remote learning. Many of the students in my class are using Zoom on their mobile devices. The students are also unaware of some of the Zoom features. They are so focused on learning, they are forced to deal with unstable internet connections and distracting surroundings. I decided to major in communications in college, because I wanted to gain the skills and abilities to tell my story and other stories in my community. But watching these students struggle with access to Zoom made me realize how much inequality affected our ability to tell our own stories. Knowing how to use technology and being able to afford Wi-Fi is one kind of barrier, but so is the ability to speak and understand each other using the same language. How can native-born Americans who don't speak Spanish truly understand the challenges faced by new immigrants? How can undocumented people tell us how they feel or what they are worried about or what they need? To cross the language barrier, we have to be able to see the common humanity in people who are different from us. I have struggled with this. When making friends and entering new social groups, I've often felt like I have to present myself in a certain way to not be judged. I have always been too white for the black people and too black for the white people, which has caused a level of self-loathing. In Soul of Black Folk, W.E.B. Du Bois wrote, "It is a peculiar sensation, the double consciousness. This sense of always looking at oneself through the eyes of others, of measuring one's soul by the tape of a world that looks on and assumes contempt and pity." I have often felt this double consciousness, and these past few semesters, I've realized how much double consciousness Latinos often feel too. In Borderlands, La Forenta, author Gloria Andulza described this Latino double consciousness as mestiz, in betweens. Latinos immigrants are a marginalized group, and speaking another language puts them in a racially alien category. They have to work twice as hard to gain half of the privileges that their white counterparts have. This stress can be extremely difficult and damaging to one's mental health. Even if they do not live literally on the border between Mexico and the United States, Spanish-speaking immigrants live emotionally and culturally in a, like, borderland. Not accepted in America, but no longer just the same as they were when they lived in their native country. It is difficult to know that you may never be fully accepted into a society due to your racial differences. In her book, In the Wake, on Blackness and Being, scholar Christina Sharp explains how the English language is tied to a history of colonialism that defines everything that is white as superior. Even though this colonial legacy continues, because anyone who wants to succeed and prosper in America must learn English, even though Americans like to believe we are a country that celebrates differences, the truth is we demand conformity. But if we can never really accept each other to be able to tell their own stories, if they have to tell their stories in a language that is not really theirs. This course and service learning experiences have given me a deeper understanding of intersectionality, structural racism, and my own privilege. I can see all the ways that being a native English speaker makes life easier for me. At the same time, I can see how many things I have in common with the students I met and I taught at Cal Alliance ESL. We are all complicated people with many layers, and life can be more complicated because we do not always fit the expectations of the American norm. The challenges the students face are made even more difficult by the economic inequalities they face as well. Cal Alliance also works hard to serve their students, and I have loved being a part of their work. I have learned so much about my new community here in Marin County. I can see the inequality and struggles many people in my community face, but I do not pity them or think I am their savior. These semesters have helped me to see my own privilege and have helped me to appreciate the strength and struggle of Latino immigrants in my community. I hope I can continue to be of service. It is important to know the difference between helping and serving, because serving is a respectful, mutually beneficial relationship, while helping is not. It is also important to be aware of the structural racism and to not try to reinforce power dynamics based on race. After the break, we are going to be discussing more of the poverty in America and structural racism. You are listening to The Butterfly Effect on Penguin Radio, 102.3 FM, only at Dominican University of California. I am your host, DJ Monarch, from A Spark to a Flame. We'll be right back. Welcome back to this episode of The Butterfly Effect on Penguin Radio, 102.3 FM, only at Dominican University of California. Once again, I am your host, DJ Monarch. On today's episode, we have been discussing the structural racism and the American dream, and I told you all a little bit about my personal experience. We're going to now continue that discussion. $26,200. That's the federal poverty line for a family of four. You may be wondering, where did this number come from? I definitely did. $26,200 is oddly specific. Well, it comes from a 55-year-old formula developed for the Social Security Administration. The formula identified how much it costs to feed a family of four based on average food prices of standard items. Then that number was times by three. Using a standardized grocery list to determine poverty is problematic. 55 years ago, food was a much larger portion of the household budget. In 1955, food was about a third of a household budget. Food is now about 10% of a household budget. In 2021, there are many more factors that come into play and that need to be taken into account when budgeting. There is the cost of housing, the cost of childcare, the cost of transportation, and even the cost of healthcare. Zero. The number of states in the United States of America where a minimum wage full-time worker can afford a two-bedroom apartment. 31%. 31% is the amount the value of the minimum wage has declined since 1968. If you are shocked by these statistics, that's okay. I definitely was too. The number I found the most shocking, though, was the federal poverty line for a family of four, which was $26,200. And honestly, not just the amount was what I found surprising. The word poverty line just doesn't quite sit right with me. I think that those who live in poverty do not experience it in such a clear-cut way. For example, if your income is just, let's say, $100 more, you're technically not in the poverty line. However, that does not mean you do not experience the effects of poverty. These numbers are not able to capture what poverty really looks like in the United States. A term you may hear a lot is the 1%. The 1% this, the 1% that, especially when it comes to talking about taxes. But sometimes it feels like the 1% is versus the 99%. The 99% is very inclusive, and obviously many Americans fall under this category, which means nearly all of us are not benefiting from the rigged economic system and the rigged political system that only really benefits the 1%. The term for this is oligarchy. Oligarchy means a small group of people having control of a country, organization, or institution. So basically, ruled by the wealthy. This word is pretty much the opposite of the word democracy. Democracy means a system of government by the whole population or all the eligible members of a state, typically through elected representatives. That is what the United States claims to be. But is it really if we're constantly battling the 1%? Even though there are often passionate, intense conversations and promises made from politicians, both Democrats and Republicans, too many fellow Americans continue to shoulder the heavy burden of poverty. Let me shine a light on some of these statistics of poverty for you. Okay, so only 4% of those classified as coming from low-income or working-class families received a college degree by the age of 28. Only 4%. According to the United States Census Bureau, the official poverty rate in 2019 was 10.5%. In 2018, 12% of the 79 million families in the United States received SNAP, which stands for Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program benefits, at some point in the previous 12 months. Those numbers are shocking and frankly extremely upsetting. Another issue impoverished communities face is gentrification. Gentrification is the process whereby the character of a poor urban area is changed by wealthier people moving in, which includes improving housing and attracting new businesses, typically displacing current inhabitants in the process. In the short documentary, Even the Walls, created by the Global Oneness Project, it touches on the multi-generational residents living in public housing in Yellsler, Terrence in downtown Seattle, and the effects of gentrification. Quote, for over 70 years, Yellsler has been home to thousands of Asians, Asian Americans, African Americans, Native Americans, Hispanic, and Caucasian residents. The 30-acre property is being redeveloped quickly, and the residents are being forced to make a decision. Collect their memories and belongings and leave, or return to a place they know well but do not recognize due to heavy reconstruction. This short documentary was extremely powerful and moving. The people in the neighborhood are a tight-knit, family-like community. Audrey, one of the women in the documentary, describes the children in the community as, quote, all her kids. People assume that these communities are pitiful and broken down, but this is not true. Audrey, along with many others, stated, quote, I enjoy life. The neighborhood is now experiencing gentrification due to the ideal location of it being located near downtown Seattle. It is extremely important to understand and hear these people's stories. Since they are part of a marginalized community, their perspective rarely gets heard. The system is rigged. Not everyone has equal opportunity. Systems are put in place to keep certain people oppressed. Certain policies are put into place and they have catastrophic effects, causing poverty throughout the United States. Thank you for joining us. You have been listening to The Butterfly Effect on Penguin Radio, 102.3 FM only at Dominican University of California. I am your host, DJ Monarch. This is The Butterfly Effect, from a spark to a flame. Please join us for next week's episode of The Butterfly Effect.